Hello, devs. Welcome back for another episode of Coding Life. Man, it's good to be back. So here, we're going to try something new. I feel like in the past here, we've had some dope people come on the podcast. I feel like we've had some dope episodes and some dope knowledge that's been shared. So I don't want an opportunity for that being missed. So we're just going to do a replay today. We're going to replay with XEA. X came on the podcast before. At the time, she was with Microsoft. And so she was running the blockchain program over at Microsoft. Now she's with Google. She's running the AI program over at Google. And so she came on board and talked about finding a solution. And she also talked about her journey as a developer up and then into how she got to Google. And so we're going to play that episode back. Hope you enjoy it. It's some great, great, great content, some great knowledge in there. So here we go.
She said, the reason you shouldn't complain is because if you can see a problem, it's because you have a piece of the solution. Like, people who can't see the same problem as me don't have the ability to contribute to a solution. So I just really feel like what good am I if I can see the problem, I know I got a way to solve it, but then I don't do the work to give myself the tools to implement that solution. So right now, I really believe technology is magic. I believe it's extremely transformational. You could build something that connects people across the globe in a way that humankind has never known before. You can now connect physical devices to the internet and be able to sense the world around you digitally. It's insane what we're capable of doing. And I think, you know, just staying with technology over the years, despite having opportunities to do many other things, it really is because this is the thing that's going to either build up the communities we come from, or we're going to get left behind from the solutions that are being built for us.
Hey, welcome back. Season 3. Man, I'm excited. Got some special guests coming up. Got some awesome stories coming up. And got some fantastic lessons coming up. Really appreciate everyone joining me along this journey. And without further ado, here we go.
Hello, devs. Welcome back. Another episode of the 100 Days of Code. I'm super excited for you guys to join. We have a special guest, X. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm always fantastic. How are you doing today, Marlon?
Oh, man, doing phenomenal. Zero complaints on this end. Where you at right now?
Right now, I am in Oakland. I am sitting on my balcony staring out at beautiful Lake Merritt. It's a wonderful day. It's probably one of the last days of heat we're going to have in the Bay Area for the next 8 months. So I'm just out here, you know, enjoying the good old Silicon Valley sun.
Define heat, because it is West Coast. So it's like 70 degrees over there. So define heat.
So in the Bay Area, it's always overcast. Like, people come here because, you know, you see all the movies as a kid of people surfing on the beach in California. And that's Southern California. Like, the Bay Area is cold. You know what I mean? It's a very, very cold place because it just sits on the ocean. So out here, warm for us is probably like 75 degrees. That's like getting pretty hot. And in the summer, you know, occasionally it'll go up to like 90, but it pretty much sits at the mid to low 80s if it does get that hot. It's pretty cold out here.
So what? Well, I guess another question. Define cold. What's the coldest it get?
It depends on where you're at in the Bay Area, but it can go down there around like 20.
Okay. You know, like right now I'm in South Florida, and People are like, oh my God, it's so cold, but you're walking around with shorts on your way to the beach.
Like, I need you to touch it, some of that sun so I can catch a tan. Like, I need to just like give me like a video or something, like one of those iMessages with the effects on it.
Right. Yeah, it's nice out here. It's funny too, South Florida, it rains. Where I'm at, I thought people was over exaggerating, but you know, it rains every single day in the summer for an hour. Mm. And I thought people was like, oh yeah, you're just kind of pushing it. And it does.
And it's, well, that's what y'all like, it's like that dude sprinkling salt on the meat in the meme. Just like that's exactly what happens.
Right.
All those salty people in the Bay Area mad that you have better weather, sprinkling a little rain on
it. It's funny, Cuffy. It's so funny because I think he's in Miami too.
He knows.
All right. X, man, we've been in contact for a while now. Mostly because of I quickly learned. I think the first introduction I got to you was like the first thing they said was like, yo, she's an awesome developer. Like, she's amazing. And it was like, it wasn't nothing. Like, oh, she's a Warriors fan, you know.
Yeah, go back.
She works for this company. The first thing I heard, like, yo, she's an amazing developer. And so what do you do now?
So at Microsoft right now, I'm an account manager. Day-to-day, Microsoft has two sides of the business. There's, like, one side of the business that actually builds the products we all use, like Excel, like Word and PowerPoint. And then there's the other side of the business that works with companies all over the world and governments all over the world to actually use those products on a large scale. So at Microsoft, I work on the industry side, and I work with about 15 to 20 clients, depending on, you know, what my workload looks like out here in the Bay Area, helping them launch pilots of some of our most experimental technologies, as well as just upgrade their day-to-day technologies. So talking like launching pilots of drones, being able to monitor how crops are growing for a vineyard out here, or being able to use IoT to do real-time ship insurance for a different client. So it's just very interesting work. I get to see some pretty mundane stuff day to day, but also being able to really see the entire IT architecture and not just the like development side of it. You know, when I first started at the company, I was an engineer in our national security group. So all I did every single day was just code. But I didn't understand like how to really build a whole company around a product that was being coded. Like, how do you manage the infrastructure? How do you manage the way people internally communicate to make sure everyone's on the same page? So my role at Microsoft right now, my primary one is an account manager, really helped me learn that. Some of the other hats I wear at the company, I'm a virtual architect. So I work with sales teams around the country to scope crazy application deals where we basically go pitch these really modernized, forward-thinking solutions to some of the world's biggest companies. And I'm also a blockchain ambassador. So in the Silicon Valley, I help people learn not just about blockchain, but also help them get started in building on it on our Azure Blockchain Workbench, which, by the way, if you haven't checked it out, it's the best way to build on blockchain right now. All the big companies are using it.
Nice. How long have you been coding?
When was I in high school, man? Well, like, oh man, I'm old now. Jeez, about to date myself. I know some people listening that was born in the 90s. Oh Lord. Okay, no. I started developing when I was in high school. When I was in high school, MySpace was the thing. This was right around the time Facebook came out to high schoolers, because at first it was a college-only platform. But in MySpace, you know, it was a really,
right.
It was our social currency, you know, much how Instagram profiles and likes or Facebook likes were, you know, your MySpace friends and who was in your top eight was the social currency of my generation. So I really wanted to have the flyest MySpace at my school. And so just naturally through tinkering with the page, I started to pick up some HTML. I went through an actual like online course and formally learned HTML and started like making websites for people just kind of on the low, trying to figure out how to do it. I would go on Craigslist and I would write like posts to offer people a free website. And then I would like pick out actual businesses, and I wouldn't get paid much, if anything at all, but was really how I built my first portfolio. Then there was a guy at my church who taught me PHP. And so once I picked that up, I was able to do like WordPress templates way back in the day before there was like, you know, your WordPress template marketplaces. So one day I was coding in a bar, and I was like probably like 21, 22. And I was at a bar in downtown Oakland, and they had this Afro Puerto Rican night every Tuesday night. I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday. But I would pull up at, you know, and just go there and eat really good food and just pull up and code. And one day this dude, he saw me, he like walked up to me, he was like, "Hey, what you doing? You building a website?" And I mean, this dude was like, okay, I'm not gonna, he looked like Rick Ross' big brother. Like, he was like big dude, you know what I mean? Big old beard, bald head, I was like, who are you, first of all, right? So actually he was like, "Hey, like, I'm hiring a web developer, come through to my business. You know, it's right around the corner, just come through tomorrow and let me see what you can do and I might give you a job." So at this point, you know, I was working, I was going to school, I was planning on being a lawyer. You know, even though I had this skill set, I didn't really see it as something that was, you know, outside of the social currency. Like, I didn't see it as something that had actual real money value, like something I could have a career in, you know? It was just something I did as like a side hustle, like burning CDs for people, or like, you know, showing people how to download movies on the internet. Like, that was, you know, I didn't see it as like, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. But anyway, I followed up with that guy. I went up to his office. His office is still there today. It's a branding company in downtown Oakland. And now they do like a lot of branding for celebrities and politicians in the area. People like Marshawn Lynch, clothing lines like Outlandish, Mr. Fab, Guapole. It's crazy, crazy. But he ended up giving me the job on the spot. And within like a year and a half, you know, he provided me all of the training that I needed. He trusted me as one of the youngest people on his team to be a web development lead. He let me be a architect on a couple of different engagements before I was even 24, that were valued over, you know, $30,000-$40,000. So it was just really amazing to really have somebody meet me and without judging who I was and just judging me straight off the skill that I demonstrated, you know, really giving me a shot. And giving me an opportunity to see myself and my skill set as something more than just, you know, what I could use and be on to, like, you know, make sure that my homies are cool. Like, I feel good in social settings. So it was really awesome. Shout out to Tyranny and Marketing Kings in downtown Oakland. Y'all are awesome.
So you say you started, you know, you say you started off with, like, you know, learning how to build your own profile from MySpace. I definitely remember those days. Changing the logo and having the original gifts.
So like
back then, like, you know,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I was a little shady when I used to hack local rappers' MySpace pages, and I would like insert code that would like embed the diss tracks in the background, and it would play them before their music started playing. So when you would go to an artist page, it would start playing the diss track before it would play their actual song. So I did that to a couple of people, just playing around with code before people knew how to edit.
Oh my God, and it's awesome. that's definitely a home run.
That was the internet troll before trolling was a thing.
So when you started off, right? So when you started off learning this and you know, even PHP, what were some of your like your early struggles with it?
The biggest struggle that I had was I didn't understand anything that the book said. Like, literally, the way that, because what happened was the guy in my church, he gave me a textbook at first. It was like PHP for dummies or something like that. And I had no idea what the...
It's amazing how hard those books are, too.
Yeah, they're not easy at all. I was like, dang, if this is for dummies, I must just be brain dead, because I don't know what you're talking about with a function and a hierarchy and a put a who and a dependency. What? Like, what? What's a class? I got to go to class. I'm in high school. I don't understand this. So it was it was really bad. You know what I mean? And I really had to get to a point where I had to recognize that the way the information presented was the problem and not me. Right. And so I think that was probably the biggest struggle when I was first learning how to code, was to recognize that, you know, the internet really gives us the ability to have information in any format we want. I just have to figure out what format I need. And if the way most people learn, which are these standard textbooks or, you know, computer science courses in a more formal way, if that's what they need, then that's okay. But I can also say, like, that format doesn't work for me and find other formats that do. So I think the biggest thing that I had to do when I was first learning how to code was I had to learn how I learn, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. That's really powerful. So let me ask you this. Let's say Jill here is listening. She's starting off coding. How can she learn her learning style?
I think that requires a little bit of personal reflection. Just like, you know, it's kind of like when you go put your resume up, do you put that you're a senior developer or not, right? It's kind of like that internal reflection on your experiences. So I think part of it is one, identifying what doesn't work for you and being honest with yourself about that, mm-hmm. and being brave enough to be honest with yourself about that. Like if you're reading a textbook and you try rereading it, you try taking notes and you still don't get it, then that textbook isn't for you. And yes, it might've cost you $50, $60, you know what I mean? But like, you got to find another way. So one is being willing to try new things. So if the textbook version didn't work for you, head over to YouTube University and maybe a combination of the textbook and people's explanations or decentralized education platforms like that or paid ones like Udemy, right? You can find what combination works. Some people can't learn from videos at all. So maybe trying a mixed curriculum for yourself. Like even when you go back to like public educations, you know what I mean? Like the schools, they don't just give you a textbook and then you just read out the textbook all day. You have different types of learning. Some are interactive. You might get up and go outside and play a game that's really a math lesson, right? You might you might go in the classroom and sing a song to learn, you know, a new vocabulary word or something. So kind of being experimental with the sources of information you're trying to learn from. I know there's a lot of great communities out there that are free where you can actually engage other humans and ask them questions. If you're not someone for like actual calls or, you know, to have like a running Slack channel, you kind of want to be left alone and just pop up and ask your questions. You might like Stack Overflow. If you're somebody who wants to like meet up with people in person and ask your questions and, you know, work alongside other people who are going this through the same things, then maybe Free Code Camp is your platform. Right. So just being able to sort of experiment and figure out what things really help ideas stick and what things really help you reinforce the learning. You may have to make up your own exercises. Right. Like if you're unable to find like a typing trainer that helps you, you know, really get down some of those weird symbols when you're first learning how to code, maybe you need to build it. Right. So I think part of it is, one, really just being honest with yourself about what doesn't work, and also being brave and being honest and willing to try different inputs of information in different modes to figure out what does work with you. Like, there's no one size fits all formula.
So you said something really, very interesting there, and it's two things. I like what you said about, you know, figuring out what works for you. And so I made a post basically about how the sorting algorithm works, and I use just like five cards, like five, you know, from a deck of cards. Mm-hmm. And I went through pretty much the cards and showing how it was work, and it was like super visual and engaging. And I was doing that to show, but I was also doing that to learn. Like mm-hmm. That really helped me like really understand it, you know, and it helped that formula kind of stick to that definition, right. as well. And then the second thing is, I think there's a very, very thin line, and me and you've talked about this. There's a very, very thin line of you're not getting it versus that learning model is not for you. Because you're not getting it maybe because of that person teaching. It's just simply overcomplicating it. Mm. You know, so it's like,
I think personally, I believe 100% of the time it's the learning model. I really, truly believe that anyone, barring, you know, physical ailments or limitations, is able to learn anything literally with the right teacher. Mm. Right. And so I don't think it's ever an individual's fault. I think if something is difficult to learn, that you can find a combination of sources or engage with people in a way that creates a way for you to learn. I really think computer science in particular, especially a lot of the educational texts, are extremely way too complicated. Like, they just are, they read like math textbooks. And if anyone's ever taken like an upper division math class, like calculus, or like calculus two, yes, or like linear algebra, or discrete mathematics, the way the books are written, like the way the professor talks about them is so different from the way the book is written. Like, okay, we already words for tables, and then now we have matrices and arrays and like all of these different mathematical terms, which I understand are needed for like, you know, like a synergy between math and computer science at an academic level, but no one's really come down to earth and broken that down to people who don't speak that language, who don't speak linear algebra, who don't speak discrete mathematics, and who have no interest in learning that far, because maybe they don't want to program machine learning algorithms. Maybe they just want to build a website for their friends who have businesses, right? And so I really think, I really firmly believe that computer science has a lot of work to do in making computer science education inclusive of people who do not come from backgrounds that are heavy in the math or traditional science fields, like your chemistry, your physics, right? Like, we need to come up with a set of education and be accountable to those that we're excluding by only having our education material in those really academic formats. Like, that's just not how most people talk. If it was, we'd have a world full of mathematicians.
It's, I mean, there's a better way than said, you know, said than that. I was talking to another developer, and he told me that, you know, like, you, it's the same thing you just said, that it's developer talk. He said developer talk is really similar to lawyer talk, where you read a paper a lawyer put together and a common person just cannot understand it. You know, and they put it that way for you to refer back to a lawyer a lot of times, like, you know, and it's like a kind of like a vicious cycle. But yeah, I definitely understand that. So
I don't think the people who like write computer science books are like, we don't want people who haven't studied math to learn how to learn. I think it's just that they're not including diverse perspectives when they're authoring these textbooks, right? So they may be testing them out on younger people, but only a certain subset of younger people, as opposed to, you know, gathering larger ranges of feedback, which could fix the problem so quick. Like, take that to high school, take that to Castlemont High School, take your AP computer science textbook to Castlemont High School and get feedback from the students, right? Like, take your AP textbook to Grady High in Atlanta and get feedback from the students. Like, don't only allow your academic circles to create educational material, because in doing that and in leaving those people out of those perspectives, out of shaping the actual material, you're by nature being like not inclusive and diverse. And as a result, you exclude people. And that's the same thing, whether it's in creating textbooks or whether it's in creating an artificial intelligence, right? Like, if we don't consider the world and the people around us, then we by default leave them out.
Wow. we can almost end there now.
I feel like I'm a walking fortune cookie. That's what I feel like.
Like a never-ending one. Like, it just keep flowing out. Just keep coming. Keep coming. So after that job that you had from Rick Ross's bigger brother.
Shout out to Terry.
After that job that you had. what were some of your projects and your notable projects and companies you worked for after that?
Okay, so yeah, I did pretty much after that a tour around the world. Some of it voluntary, some of it not. I went to Afghanistan in 2012 and was there until 2014 with the United States military. I was there part of the time as a soldier, another part of the time as a contractor. And essentially, I did a lot of stuff with data management for the Special Operations Command. It was really interesting. It was a brand new command that was being stood up. I got to work on some really interesting projects and learned a lot technically while I was out there in that time. When I came back from there, from Afghanistan, I moved to Atlanta. Shout out to Atlanta. I love Atlanta. I went to Atlanta. I bought a house out there. I settled down. And I started working at a company out there that's like a Microsoft partner. And so they would go, and on behalf of Microsoft, they would take care of like deploying solutions in the industry when Microsoft couldn't do it. So most people don't know, like, when people roll out our technologies, sometimes they hire us directly, but most of the times they hire like companies that are just affiliated with us to do the work. And we really work to make sure they can do the work at the same quality that we could ourselves, right? So worked in a Microsoft partner. I did some stuff for Georgia Tech. I did some stuff for a school district. I think it was Gwinnett County Public Schools. So I did some consulting for a couple of different engineering companies out there. And that's really when I got like heavy into the startup game. So I was a part of a couple of pitch competitions out there. And then back in the Bay Area, I got started with a company called SyncFab. And they recently just had their ICO earlier this year where they raised over $10 million. And I think now they're over $15 million total. So shout out to the SyncFab family. Congratulations on all the growth. And then after that, a very interesting offer came up. I got offered an opportunity to move to Japan as a developer, which was just absolutely amazing. I went and lived in Okinawa, Japan, which is a tropical island off the coast of mainland Japan. It's got like two different oceans on it. So really awesome working out there. I did some work for the United States Marine Corps. They had some information they needed to share between them and the Japanese government. So I worked on the data systems to do that. It was really awesome. It was really my first like IT executive role. And I like was 25. So I was like 25 and everyone else around me was like 20, 30 years my senior. It was very intense, but really blessed to have had that opportunity. Shortly after that, man, Microsoft DM'd me on LinkedIn and was like, hey, do you want to come work for us? And man, most people don't know
this. It goes down in the DM.
They were like, hey, what's up? You want some great benefits and an amazing career?
I don't want to miss this because you just said something. I want to touch a little bit on your Japan experience because I don't think I've ever heard that from any developer ever. Like, what was that like?
It was really interesting because I worked for an American company. I worked for a really large construction company that was doing a project out in Japan. So I got both a very American experience and a very Japanese experience. But the Okinawan experience in particular, like just as a culture, like they themselves were colonized by the Japanese. And then they like, Okinawa as a culture is just really different from mainland Japan because they were their own culture and like their own country before the Japanese came in and took over. So I got like almost like a mix of three cultures while I was there. I got to see what Okinawan food was like, what Okinawan culture was like. And then I also got to see what Japanese culture was like and what Japanese language was like. And there was a whole bunch of Americans there. So it was like very easy to stay there and not ever feel too homesick. From a programming perspective, it was amazing. I mean, out there, they do a lot of like technology at the intersection of the environment. Okinawa as an island and the University of Okinawa have some of like the leading like biotechnology companies in the physical science space. So they do a lot of research in like how to protect coral reefs and like how to preserve data about or preserve data about what happened at certain places at certain points in time. So they have like a bunch of old trails like up in the mountains of Okinawa that are like tens of thousands of years old that were from like the warriors who walked like the path in this legend. That's like a huge part of their culture, but they literally have the trails to prove it. So doing stuff like that, you know what I mean? There's a lot of technological innovation out there, just not in the ways that you would think of because, you know, they innovate about what's important to them. Plus like the whole island had fiber internet and this was like 4 or 5 years ago.
So that helps.
Yeah, and it was like $40 a month, too. It was amazing. I missed that internet.
Shout out to Japan. All right, and so then you said from there, you went in. Now, did you go into the Marine Corps, or are you just working for the Marine Corps?
No, I was a contractor for them. I was in the Army for 8 years, but I was a reservist. So when I went to Afghanistan, I was like called up for deployment. And then I just continued to work as a civilian in the DoD space. It was awesome. I got an opportunity. I didn't feel like I was ready. All right. So in 2012, when I was deployed, I was a student at UC Berkeley. I was like, I just finished up my junior year. I was getting ready to like plan out my final year. And then I got deployment orders. So after Afghanistan, I wasn't really ready to just like jump back into school. So I worked for several years in the industry. I went from Afghanistan to working in Afghanistan to working in Atlanta to working in Japan before I got the amazing DM from Microsoft.
And all this was by the time you were 25?
Yeah, I think I turned 26 the year Microsoft hired me. Yeah.
And you say you was how old when you started coding?
Like 16, 15, 16. I mean, I got into it seriously when I was like 17 and 18. But yeah, I really started like cranking away at it at like 16. And I didn't have access to a lot of the tools that people have now. Like back then, there were no AngularJSs. There were no ExpressJSs. It was plain old JavaScript and geez, not even really jQuery back then. It was more so just JavaScript, right? It was like a lot of the platforms and tools that are available today that may seem overwhelming for new developers. Like, oh, do I choose an Angular or React or an Express? Or like, what framework and what backend technology? Do I learn SQL or NoSQL, right? Like all of the things that may seem like burdens or stuff you have to overcome are actually like blessings. Because once you learn how to use those tools, they dramatically shorten your development time, right? And this is someone who like studied COBOL formally, right? Where like, I actually know how to program in COBOL. I did some like crazy data center stuff for a while. And it's like, even though this, it may seem overwhelming because it may seem like a lot to learn, a lot of these tools really will help you implement things that even just 5 years ago would have taken 10, 15 times as long, right? So it really is just about knowing what the tools are and how you.
So, and the reason I ask that is because I get people kind of reaching out to me, and you know, I hear conversations that people are kind of frustrated with their journey, but they're literally like 12 to 24 months in. Mm. Like, you're still learning, and so it's funny because I had the opportunity to basically build a tech company before this, so I have an understanding of what it takes, and you know the patience of it. So it's like, you know, you got to work, you know, hard, but also be patient and understand that it's not going to happen, you know, overnight. Especially with coding, and also too with hiring and getting your, you know, first Microsoft job. Mm. You know, in your 12 to 24 months in.
Yeah, I mean, I think.
And so.
My first piece of advice is an old joke that one of my very first mentors told me, which is the only difference between a junior developer and a senior developer is a senior developer knows shit is not going to work the first time. He knows it's not going to work the first 10 times. That is the only difference. So.
Wow.
I mean, you're never going to get out of the same process of writing computer software. You're never going to write stuff that doesn't work. It's not like you're going to wake up one day and magically be able to flawlessly write computer software. Like there's maybe some people out there who do that. I know a couple of like Vim wizards who can do some like amazing things in 30 seconds, right? But most software developers and most people who are not like dedicated or that perfectionist are able to find solace in the process. And it's the process of creating something new, right? So think of like an artist painting something. Like maybe the first couple brush strokes, which are literally, unfortunately, in computer science, the first couple of years, they may say, oh, I'm never going to get this painting done. I'm never going to finish it. But in computer science, I mean, the beauty is in the process of creating the software. You're literally taking your mind, the things that you type into a computer, and you're creating something real. Something that actually exists in the world. I don't know too many other people who can wake up and like use their mind to create something real.
Right.
Something that I can like look at with my eyes, something that I can like carry around with me in my phone if it's an app, something that can impact people in places that I'll never even go in my lifetime, physically, right? Like all around the world. And so I think part of it is really a rework in a mindset, right? Like we talked about that earlier when we were talking about how people learn. Part of it is also like, how do you perceive failure? Because failure is literally not an option. It is a part of the process, just as much as success can be if you allow yourself to not be stopped by failure. So now that you know it's not optional, like flags in certain cases or like, you know, class names and certain parameters inside of like naming conventions, right? Like if someone told you, you literally cannot put an underscore at the beginning of your class name or of your function name, you know what I mean? What are you going to do? Sit there and cry? Like, oh my gosh, all I wanted to do in life was put that there. Like it's the same thing about failure. It's not optional. It's a part of the process. But when you become comfortable with failing, that's when you start finding successes, because sometimes you fail your way into success.
Right.
You recognize the thing that you tried didn't work. Now you can find the thing that did work. And so I think as someone who's gone through this process and this journey, positivity, always being willing to learn and enjoying learning. Like in any job you take, you're going to have to learn something new. Even if you're just like a UPS mail delivery clerk, when they start getting like robots in those facilities to like give you the packages, you're going to have to learn how to interact with them. Just the same way that when a new version of a library is released, you're going to have to learn the new documentation rules, or not the rules. You're going to have to learn the new features of the software. You're going to have to go to the documentation and update yourself. Well, or unless you're a visual learner and you go back to YouTube University and check it out, right?
Right. And everything you just said is, my new favorite word is perspective. Complaining, which I rarely do now. I mean, I can't even tell you last time I did complain. But it's all about just perspective. And so one of the things too that helped me kind of get through, like you said, that failing process, because it is a part of the process, I told myself, I'm not going to get it the first three times.
Three, you're fast, man. I'd be like the first 8 to 12. I might write half the software and nothing work, and that's okay. I'll come back tomorrow.
Right. But I've told myself, like, I'm not going to get it the first three times. And, but watch, this is what I do. So, especially like with taking CS50 right now, like, I literally, what I do now is I watch the video and I'm like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't understand nothing you said. Like, oh, and then I said, okay, cool. Like, you know, I look over the notes or whatever, then I go back and watch the video. Oh, okay, I caught that. You know, then I go back and watch the video again. By the third time, I've already caught 2, 3, 4 things that I didn't catch before. That's a W. So now I get to start over, okay? Mm. Now my clock starts over, okay? Now I got 3 more times to figure this out. Then 3 more times to figure this out. Like, and so it completely eliminated my frustration, because before I started talking to people, and this is why it's so big to, you know, for find some type of community, if it's on social media, if it's meetups, Slack, whatever, find some type of community, because once I learned that it wasn't just me, oh, I was good. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, you got to watch this 10 times too? Oh, okay, cool. All right, let's go. You know, but for the longest, I thought it was just me, you know, kind of struggling, you know, and falling forward. But yeah, once I learned that though,
that's really powerful, man.
It's been fun. Like it's really been fun. Like I look forward to it. Like it's like even CS50, even, and watch this. With CS50, and it's still hard. With CS50 now, I go into it knowing that I'm not going to probably understand the first couple things he say, knowing I'm going to be frustrated. I've developed a type of weird infatuation for it. Like I look forward to it, and I look forward to getting through that frustration. Mm. You know, and I completely count the small wins. Completely. I'm going to put it on the shot clock. That is a W. And I just understood one line that he said.
I mean,
doesn't
I just
matter.
Think of it like a company, you know, that would discount profit because it's not that big. Like, if it's your first sale, if your first sale is 45 cents for something, that's a sale, because 45 cents times 100,000 customers is a lot of money.
Right.
And so being able to just take your wins as wins and understand your losses as a functional part of the process and not allowing yourself to develop fear, man. And it's really, really powerful that you've been able to do that, especially going through something like CS50.
A buddy of mine's Frederick from Pidgely told me something a long time ago when I was working on Recur, and I was talking to certain investors. He told me something very powerful, and I still use it now with Even Coding. Fred, man, if you're listening, shout out to you. He told me something that he said, you define what your wins are. Mm. He said, don't let other people define what your wins are. You know, don't let other people say, you know, until you know JavaScript, React, and then how to build an app from top to bottom, No. If you understand, you know, tomorrow with what an array is, which I went on a complete rant about that, and it actually started from you, which is funny. If you understand what an array, a function, a variable is, that's a win. Take those small wins, like put them in your pocket. You know, hold them, treasure them.
Catch a little wind and put it in your pocket. Catch a falling wind. And, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, like, and so I definitely think, when you're looking for these communities, be kind of read through it and kind of watch for trolls, because they're out there, unfortunately. Mm. You know, people that, you know, get it now, and now they kind of want to push other people down because they get it and they feel better about themselves. Get over yourself.
Yeah, but that's what's gonna work, right? Like, there might be a guy who gets the robots at UPS a little bit faster than the other, and he's kind of a jerk about it. You know, I think it's also just really important to stress the fact that, like, anything you experience in any other factor of business is something you're gonna experience in computer science and in software development, right? Like, it's gonna be the same people problems. They're not, like, magically less susceptible to human nature because they do something that you perceive as super smart, right? It's not like people are going to magically all of a sudden be just helpful for the sake of it. You're still going to have your different personalities, people who don't clash. You're also going to have, like, days where you feel like you can't do it. You know, I'm sure there are accountants who feel like that, who feel like they may not know the tax law good enough to do what they're doing. I'm sure that there are, you know, even like physical workers, man, like landscapers or something, who feel like they can't do it again. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like everything that you experience in computer science, you experience in every other facet of business. So don't just limit yourself to computer science communities, right? Like, also go out into general business communities, because you may find synergies with your struggles and with your wins with people in different sectors of business.
That's a great point. That's a really great point. One of my mentors told me that, he said, look at computer science as a roommate that you can't get rid of. Like, look at coding as a roommate that you can't get rid of. Like, you got to live together, so you might as well figure it out. Like, and it was just a great way to look at it. And, you know, you the one decide to move in here. So, hey, get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Definitely.
So, yeah. So. Moving on to first of all, let's back up a little bit to originally where are you from?
I'm from California. I'm from a city called Richmond. No, not Richmond, Virginia. If anyone's ever seen Coach Carter, that was about Richmond, California. Yeah, shout out. real Richmond. I'm from Richmond.
And you said, like, born and raised there?
Yeah, so I was born there. I was raised there for most of my childhood, and then bounced around different cities in the Bay Area. You know, I have a very large family. My mom had 8 kids and was a single mother. So it's just, you know, a little instability during, you know, growing up, bouncing from city to city as, you know, rent prices and stuff would change. But yeah, mostly from Richmond. If mostly is a thing.
So here's a two-part question, but you may answer it on the first response. When you finally understood that, okay, you didn't want to go into law school, that you want to do the coding, did you have a why you want to keep going, like, doing this?
One is that I talk to lawyers. I think that was one of the things I forgot to do when I was like, I want to be a lawyer. It was like, actually talk to somebody who did that job. And I lost complete interest. I sat down with four or five different attorneys over lunch and was like, oh my goodness, no, like this would be the worst use of my time and skill that I could possibly think of. And I don't know what else I could do. Right. The time I had a real interest to like get into film and video. And I was like, maybe I'll just drop out of UC Berkeley and like go to filmschool.com and like learn how to make movies. Right. Like tripping. So instead, you know, when I really figured out what I wanted to do, it was that I wanted to be able to solve problems that I saw in the world. And I wanted to build tools to be able to do that. And when I was younger, I used to think becoming a lawyer would give me the tools to do that because I'd be able to change laws. But after experiencing technology and its use in Afghanistan on that level, to see what type of impact it could have for our government, to be able to optimize our operations and really like do all types of crazy transformational things, it really drove in my heart that I could use technology to be of service to not just the communities that I come from, whether they be ethnic, whether they be regional, like people from the same city, but just like the globe, because like I'm a global citizen, right? So it's like giving back to the globe and doing that by creating solutions to the problems that I see. So one of the things that my grandmother really, really drove into me when I was a kid was don't complain, right? But she said, the reason you shouldn't complain is because if you can see a problem, it's because you have a piece of the solution. Like people who can't see the same problem as you don't have the ability to contribute to a solution. So I just really feel like, what good am I if I can see the problem, I know I got a way to solve it, but then I don't do the work to give myself the tools to implement that solution. So right now, I really believe technology is magic. I believe it's extremely transformational. You could build something that connects people across the globe in a way that humankind has never known before. You can now connect physical devices to the internet and be able to sense the world around you digitally. It's insane what we're capable of doing. And I think, you know, just staying with technology over the years, despite having opportunities to do many other things, it really is because this is the thing that's going to either build up the communities we come from, or we're going to get left behind from the solutions that are being built for us. So I really just want to be a part of the creation of transformation. Like I want to wake up in a world I want to live in one day.
And yeah, that's beautiful what you just said. So let me ask you this. What have you seen as far as like your journey and your success, and actually your success and failures? How have you seen that impact your immediate circle and your family and friends?
Ooh, that's a very good question. I think it depends on how the situations impact me. I mean, I've been a part of probably more than a half dozen startups now, probably around 7 or 8, like actual C corporation startups, not just ideas me and my friends hacked on. Some of them I stayed with, some of them I left, some of them were not successful despite our attempts. And I think really it depended on how personally I took each of those. There were some successes that went a little too far to my head. There were some failures that I took a little bit too personally and affected how I felt about myself. And of course, when you're in a low place, like your people are gonna be down there with you. Like if I'm walking around moping all day and I'm sad and complaining about everything because I feel bad because the business didn't work out the way I intended, instead of getting up and working on a new business that might work as intended, right? That affects everyone around you. It affects your people. If you're a leader and you maybe are failing as a team, or you perceive that you're failing as a team, that can affect your leadership style, and it affects people's belief in the overall vision of the company, right? And I think that's key, especially in startups, especially when you're starting up a new career, if you're starting up a new business, if you're starting up a new technology venture, or you're starting to learn something new. And in a startup, I'd argue that the number one thing that you have to be successful at a bare minimum is collective vision, which means every person that is working on this project with you has to believe that the project can be good, and that the project will be successful, even if it's not the product or project you start with, right? And I think that's key, because if there are people who don't believe that from the beginning, it can poison the way that the team is built. It can poison the culture of your team. And if you are the person doing it as the person leading the initiative, you get all types of chaos, right? So I really think for me personally, it's really been a big balance of just really accepting that failure is a part of the process. Like, some companies I'm going to try to join and they won't hire me. Some companies I'll go to and, you know, we'll be really successful. Some companies I'll go to and, you know, we might start with one idea and 6 months later have to scrap it and go to something else and hope that that works, right? So it really is just about, again, going back to like what you said, your word perspective. So how it impacts me depends on my perspective on the situation. Am I taking something too personally? Am I taking something in a way that's unnecessary? Or am I taking this as a constructive feedback about how I can do business better in the future? Whether that's financial decisions or technical decisions or hiring decisions, whatever they are.
So let me add to that. And excuse me if I go on a rant here, because this is a very personal topic right here. Clear his throat. You said something really interesting. You said that, you know, if you're running a company, you know, you got to have a clear vision, and then you got to make sure that the rest of the company has a clear vision. Let me break it down to something very, very personal. I learned something about myself a couple years ago that I'm very, very, very addicted to making people around me better. Mm. I'm extremely addicted to the point I can be annoying. And I know that, and I personally don't give a damn. Mm-hmm. Because if I call you a friend, and if I say that I love you, and I got your back, and I'm not calling you out on your shit, then I might as well just be an enemy. Mm-hmm. So what you just said there, as far as making sure the company is well ran, I'm going to give it a little bit to you. That is the same principle of a family. Mm-hmm. And the reason I bring that up is because, and the reason I originally asked this question is because, don't get to the point where you're so selfish and ready to quit when there's people around you counting on you, looking up to you, waiting for you to win so you can inspire them to win. Don't hold the world back because you're so lazy and you're selfish that you don't want to do what you need to do. The world spins for a reason, and it's because a lot of people that they're doing what they're supposed to do. But the one person in that family, in that community, in that neighborhood, in that school don't do what they're supposed to do, it slows the world down.
Thank you. Say it.
And the this is one of the most passionate and the most annoying thing. I lie to you not. I literally have friends that would avoid my call because they know why I'm calling. Mm-hmm. I have friends I haven't talked to.
Marley coming to collect. Bring.
I haven't talked to. I got friends I haven't talked to in 3 months because they know why I'm calling. I don't get how you are an individual, man, woman, boy, or child. I don't get how you can sit there and not work on your dreams if you have a child.
You know,
that's what you're teaching them?
I think part of it is
mindset.
I think part of it is where people are at, right? Like, mental health and mental health issues are real. And sometimes people can discourage themselves from accomplishing or even trying new things to the point where you get kind of like mentally sick about it. Like, you genuinely just don't believe you can do things. You know, it's kind of like when you lie to yourself so many times, it becomes the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think to kind of echo off what you were saying, the most selfish thing a person can do is not honor themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most selfish thing you can do. Like, imagine if you you get a credit card for $1,000, right? You know, some general rules of credit cards, you're not supposed to spend over 30%, so I'm not supposed to spend over $300 on this credit card if he's trying to be, like, you know, big baller American Express in a couple of years, right? So right. You are walking through Oakland and you see a homeless camp. You decide, yo, every paycheck, I'm going to spend some money on this new credit card. I'm going to pay it back for my Uber driving, for my coding, for my hawking my WordPress things, whatever it is you're doing. And you say, yo, I'm going to buy these people food and I'm going to give them some food. Now imagine if you go in there and you buy a whole bunch of food and you don't pay your credit card bill. It'll still work for a while. Like, you'll be able to go in there a couple more times and swipe. But one of two things is going to happen. One, either you're going to hit your limit and not be able to spend anymore. Or two, the company is going to cut your card off because you haven't paid. And that's the same thing that happens with our capacity as people. Like, you have to honor yourself. You have to give back to yourself. You have to pay your own emotional and mental credit card bills to take care of yourself so you can actually give. Because what's better, a burnt out person in a short period of time or somebody who only spent what they could actually afford, which might only have been $50 in groceries a week, right? And giving those $50 of groceries a week for a whole year. Sure, you didn't hit as many people as if you would have gone in and swiped all $1,000 at once. But now you're able to sustain your giving and do it in a way that makes a larger impact over a longer amount of time. So if you are trying to do something for the world, you have to give back to yourself. That's the number one rule. You have to pay your own damn credit card bills.
And that, man, that I like what you said, that you have to pay your emotional credit card bill. Like, I've never heard that term. And that can go in so many different lanes, you know, to physical, to spiritual, like, you know, whatever lane, you know, you believe in, like, absolutely. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, it really is about, like, self-care. You have to take care of yourself. And what that means is multidimensional. Self-care is not just, yo, I go to bed and I don't drink with my homies every weekend. Like, what are you doing to manage stress? Because when you get in a startup, you are going to be stressed. When you start up anything brand new, I mean, learning guitar is stressful too, right? So what do you do to manage stress? What are you doing to prepare yourself for the next version of this software that you're, or this software tool or this library that you're so used to working with? Like, what are you doing to work to prepare for the future? You know?
I learned something too. When you're in such a state, when you're in such a particular state for a while, your body gets uncomfortable when you're trying to change. That can be good or bad.
Mm. You know, there's a lot of research coming out right now about this thing called, there's a lot of research coming out right now about this thing called neuroplasticity. And what neuroplasticity is it's your brain's ability to change based on the things you think. So there's a difference between like your physical brain and then like your real world experience or like what you perceive the world as. So one is called like your mental experience. So like the things we think. And then there's like your literal biological brain. So the mental experience is like your consciousness, right? So there's a lot of research right now on neuroplasticity or how your consciousness affects your biological brain. So when you think bad thoughts, what happens to your brain, right? And research across the board, whether it's in drug abuse or whether it's in performance enhancing drugs and all these different types of like things that people put in their body to affect their experience, what they're finding is the most powerful factor in how those things actually influence you is if you think you're actually going to be influenced by them or not. So they did a study not too long ago of students who were using like Adderall to try to study, right? And what they found is that Adderall itself didn't actually make a difference whether or not a student thought that they had taken Adderall and whether or not they thought that it was going to make them better impacted their performance.
Power of the mind.
Right? And these are documented studies now. So again, back to what you were saying, like perspective. It's all about perspective. So if you are not taking care of yourself and your mental, if you're not, you know, it doesn't mean you have to be some type of hippie and like go do yoga and like go vegan. Like that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying finding the balance that works for you. Whatever that means, because only you know you, like, you're you.
Right. Man, don't nobody do you better than you.
Nobody can, literally. Like, there's not another person on this earth who's literally walked with your experiences every single day of your life. Like, your body remembers things biologically that you don't remember in your mental experience that happened decades ago. if you're that old, right? Like, my body remembers things from when I was 5 years old. Like, there's literally no other person in this world who was me at 5 years old in my house with my experiences. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so it's like, you're so uniquely you, you have to tune into yourself. And whether that's tuning into yourself to see if you're actually learning something from a certain format, whether that's tuning into yourself to see if you actually vibe with the person that you're trying to start a business with, and if you really have confidence in them, and being okay to say no if you don't, right? Whether that's, you know, it just really is about tuning into yourself and tuning about what you need. Like, don't try to go into a sales meeting without eating if you're hungry. Like, listen to yourself. Don't try to go, like, pitch your startup on no sleep. Like, rest. Like, whether or not you feel like you need it in your mind, like, your body knows you need it. And so it really is just about figuring out what you need and working to make sure that you carve out time and space to give that to yourself, because it'll make you more successful in pretty much every endeavor, not just in learning how to cook.
And that's really dope what you just said too. You know, it's sort of like the, you know, resting part, because, you know, a lot of times we hear preach no sleep, you know, like team no sleep. I'm gonna tell you just a small interesting statement that I heard. A guy said, him and his co-founder, they built a pretty well-known company. I'm gonna tell you the name of it. 8 hours a day, and that was it.
Wow.
They said from 9 to 5, they built their company, and that was it. And they went super hard between 9 to 5, and then they shut it down. You know who said that?
Who?
Kevin Systrom, Instagram.
Wow. Yeah, it's all about balance, man. I mean,
they shut it down.
I have two phones for a reason, and this is probably what helps me be most successful. Is like, hey, I work Monday through Friday. Friday evening, Friday afternoon, probably like 6:37. I turn my phone off. I turn my work phone off. I have a completely separate device that I only use for work. I don't have my work email attached to my personal phone. I don't do work on my personal phone. I come into my house, and if I don't want to do work, I leave my personal phone in the kitchen, as long as it's like after hours, obviously, you know? But it's really about that balance. Like, and then probably Sunday evening, I'll turn it back on. And then that way I give myself space to do things that I want to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, on the weekends, I really have a life, have balance, so that I can come back and be inspired and not burnt out by my idea. Because turning an idea into a real life business or a real tangible thing is exhausting. That same energy complaining about the problem to figure out solutions you can think of, right? So one of the problems that I see in the tech industry is kind of like the gap to even start coding, right? It's like people come from so many different types of background. Like, some people grow up with computers in their houses. Some people grow up using their phones for internet. And like, even just getting people to the same typing level to, you know, like, get them all on the same pace to code is difficult. So one of the things that I've been really passionate about over the last 2 years, especially working, you know, on the cutting edge of industry, of many industries, from the financial sector, manufacturing sector, the healthcare sector, so working with some of the world's largest companies, is I've really been looking at what jobs are coming out in the future and really figuring out how we can prepare our kids for jobs that are gonna be coming out before they hit, right? So it's not like with coding where it comes out, it's a big skill, and then we kind of got to like catch up and start learning. So one of the things we're going to be doing starting in the month of October out here in the Bay Area is we're going to be teaching kids how to fly drones. So I'm super excited about that. Making major moves to get a bunch of inner city youth certified as FAA certified as drone pilots. So just super excited about that. You guys can look out for the movement. It's Hack the Sky. Super excited. If you have a sibling who wants us to bring the program to the school, it's an extremely low-cost program. We have drone insurance included. We provide the drones, the curriculum. We'll come in and teach your teachers how to teach it. We really just want to empower as many people as we can to really be up not just on drone technology, but all aeronautical technologies as well as aerospace technologies. So we're also looking at partnering and doing some work to teach kids how to, like, understand the way rockets work and understand the way the solar system works on a deeper level, so they can start ideating around like space technologies as well.
Super dope. So you said that you can go and teach
anywhere in the United States.
Are these just schools in Oakland, or can it be like
close to an airport? just because the airspace may be restricted, we may not be able to fly the drones there, right? So we may have to like do it indoors in the cafeteria or something. But for the most part, we're looking at starting in the Bay Area in October. By January, we're going to be in Seattle. Hopefully, we'll be bringing it to Atlanta by March or April or sooner if there's individuals out there who want us to come and bring the program. So it's basically any individuals who are 16 or older and can pass the TSA background check. There's no like actual flight requirement for the certification, but we do provide over 80 hours of flight training to the people to make sure that not only do they get the certificate, but like we pair them up with local media companies for internships. So think like your local news station or, you know, actual professional videographers who are shooting videos for construction companies and actually let them get hands-on experience using the drones in the real world.
Especially in Atlanta, with all the movies going on, like, you know, they're already filming, you know, like the next Avengers, and so I've seen some of the cuts of they use a lot of drones on their
That's funny. Shout out to his little brother White Dave.
Shout out to Ryan Coogler. But yeah, so
shout out to White Dave. I know he's got a project dropping soon.
Oh, nice.
Musician, he's amazing. Yeah, it's just, I mean, that's the other thing about the Bay Area.
It looks like
the
whole family is amazing.
Something about the energy here, right? Like, this is the birthplace of so many movements of the Black Panther Party, of the LGBTQ rights movement across the whole country. Like, so many revolutionary, like the tech movement, so many like transformative, like programs or organizations or products come out of this area in particular. And I don't know what it is. You know, some people say it's the energy. Some people say it's just the way that the community is and still interacts. But it's just something amazing about, like, the types of artists that come from here. Like, everybody loves the R&B singer H.E.R. She's from Vallejo. That's right down the road. You know, everyone loves G-Eazy and Kehlani and your Ryan Cooglers and your, you know what I mean? It's just crazy.
I keep hearing G-Eazy. I haven't listened to him, but I keep hearing that name.
His music's really cool. He also has a really dope personal story and does a lot of dope work. Like, his mom was LGBTQ. He lost one of his parents to suicide when he was younger. So now, like, all the work he does for the community centers around, like, I think he just gave like $2 million to the largest LGBTQ homeless center, like, in the country. And it's in San Francisco to, like, make sure that kids who are, you know, LGBTQ don't have resources, don't end up in the same path or have the same struggles that his mom did. Despite being like a multi-millionaire rapper who could like give his money to anything, he's still giving back to his lineage, you know? So it was really cool. Got a lot of respect for him, and his music's dope too.
Cool. What, I think the drone thing is going to be just, I mean, it's gonna be super dope. Like, honestly, I'd be open to taking a class. Like, I think that's going to be super dope, especially when we see companies like Amazon, what they're doing with the drones, you know, with plenty of other companies and stuff are going to start doing, especially in my opinion. I think when 5G really hits, like,
I don't know if it's just really 5G. On a global scale, I think we're going to see IoT go through. We also don't have enough computing power to, like, really work on. I don't think we have enough like high performance computers just yet to scale to the type of like sci-fi solutions that we see, right? So like the world where like you just walk into a Target and it changes advertisement because it knows it's you. Like, we won't be there until we have enough computing power to run those type of solutions on a global scale for like 7 billion people. You know what I mean? And we're just not there yet. So I think with some of the advances that we're making in quantum computing, once we get to a place where we can like do processes that would take traditional computers hundreds of millions of hours in like an hour or two, right? I think that's when we're really going to see the transformation. 5G is definitely going to enable it, but I think we really are a pretty straight shot away from being like full, what was that movie, like Minority Report, right? Like, we don't have that ability to even like power those devices on that scale by like just ingesting the data from them. So we'll be there, just not yet. 5G is certainly part of it, but also we need quantum computing, and it's coming.
It's funny. I was looking at a video. I was doing some research on quantum computing because I didn't understand mm-hmm. it, and when it made me uncomfortable. So that made me want to go understand it. and I've been like looking at videos, YouTube University.
Crazy.
I definitely see the benefits. It's definitely revolutionary.
Like the dude who proved like some of the stuff about quantum physics true. There's one guy who did it with the particle that we use in Microsoft. He's probably going to like end up winning the Nobel Prize in his lifetime. Like we're on like the cutting edge of research, of physics research, of neuroscience research, of technological research, and like quantum computing just like coming down the line. It'll make it so like stuff that entire data centers. So you're talking like high performance computers that can like run all the financial transactions in the world off of Visa cards, right? Just as an example, I don't really know if that's what they use their data centers for. But like if you had like took that center and you could do that with just like the equivalent computing power of just like one laptop. Imagine how much more efficient our world can become when we can augment the things that we do in human life, not replace, but augment. So like think of nurses, right? Like in the ER and stuff, how they be searching for supplies. Like if you ever watched that show, Grey's Anatomy, they always be in there like, crash cart, where's the cart? Where's the this? Hand me this. And then they like take a couple seconds mm-hmm. to find it. Imagine if like we had like robots who could just go get that stuff for the nurses like super quick, or always knew where everything was. It was not even like an actual robot that would go get it. Just imagine if the nurse could say, I need this, and it would tell her where it is immediately because it had an IoT device on it. You know what I mean? Like that's the type of stuff where we can really benefit from society. So as much as people think of like,
right.
ooh, spooky killer robots, like most of the development of these technologies are for good. They're to help us be more efficient humans. So even like drones, right? Like people think drones, they think the military, they think Syria, they think police departments spying on people. But the number one use of drones in the United States in like police offices and stuff is for like search and rescue missions. Like when they do have them, they just deploy them. So like if someone falls off the side of a cliff, or if someone's like trapped in a really dangerous situation, they don't have to risk someone's life. They could just send a couple drones over to check it out and see where the person is. And these drones have different cameras that you can switch out to like see thermal imaging. So if it's dark outside, you could actually find the person without having to go out there and like look around for hours. Like it makes life better in certain ways. The number two use of drones in the US is precision agriculture. So you're talking about farming, making sure that like crops are growing better, getting more yield out of your crops, like producing more food in a world where we're having more people without having to put more people in those type of labor conditions. You know what I mean? And so it was really cool. Like just as much, I feel like all things in balance, right? So just as much right. as there's potential in the world for there to be like, ooh, crazy killer robots, there's also potential for really, really cool solutions. But if you don't see yourself, or you don't imagine a world where those you are a participant in those worlds, like what will your personal assistant be like, Marlon? When like it gets to the point where you get like a new speaker out the box and you get to customize your personal assistant, like what will your personal assistant be like? You know, and if we're not imagining that world, like, yo, one day we're gonna have cars that don't drive on the ground and we're gonna have them drive us around. Like what kind of car do you want? What type of things do you want people to consider when they're building these solutions? And start imagining yourself as a participant in this reality, as opposed to as someone it's just gonna happen to.
And find a way to just say that to participate.
Man, what's crazy is most of the stuff that we're seeing in technology now was complete science fiction like 30 years ago. Like when my aunt and my mom and my dad were like 20, all of this stuff was like, yeah, right, you're crazy talking about quantum physics, and you're crazy thinking that we could have devices where we could watch TV while we walk around on the street. Like all of this stuff was just not at all seen as something that was possible. But because people...
30 years ago, think about that's this. I
was a kid when the first color cell phone came out. I feel super old saying that. Yeah. You know, when it was that Verizon flip phone, I remember that. But, you know, it really is.
Thanks, Marlon.
Seeing these things and seeing yourself as a part of this experience. And the more that you are able to learn about these technologies and also share your knowledge so other people can learn from you, the larger impact you'll have when this reality is being shaped. Like, a lot of people don't recognize you already interface with artificial intelligence. It's in your traffic lights, right? It's your banks use it behind the scenes. Your hospitals and stuff use it behind the scenes. They use it in their day-to-day processes. Insurance companies use it to make decisions about claims. Like, this stuff is already real, right? This stuff is already real and it's already here. So instead of putting it off as like some crazy, like, I can't know. It's like the bots are coming, the drones are coming, like tech is coming. It's like, hey, why don't you take a step back and envision yourself and in a world where you are not only just a creator of this narrative, but where you get to be a shaper of it. Like, you get to like say, because you have access to the technology, I want an AI that can do this. I want a bot that can do this, right? That solves your problems. Like, that's the thing. Like, so that's really all inclusivity is just including different perspectives. So start by including your own.
And solving an issue for your, you know, community, you know, genre, you know, wherever you're coming from. Because like you said earlier, you know, people might be solving issues and stuff that they see, and you solve issues and stuff that you see. Man, this has been great, enlightening, engaging, phenomenal conversation.
Instagram at
X. Where can the people find you?
Twitter at Tech with X. So that's just TECHWITHX. If you guys want to chat with me or learn more about what I'm doing, you go on my Instagram and my bio. There's a link where you can book time on my calendar. I'm always open to the community, always open to discussions, always open to knowledge sharing. And also, if you have something really cool you're working on or something really cool to teach me, I'm always down to learn.
Sweet. Man, guys, girls, reach out to her. If you could not recognize within the first pretty much 30 seconds of this conversation, she's phenomenal. You know, she is not only have been a friend throughout this process, she's been a mentor, a guider, a leader of the community, and I am fortunate, thankful, grateful that I can call on her. Grateful that I can, you know, reach out to her. And it's been an absolutely treasure to have something, to have someone as such as her in my corner. These are the reasons why I'm going to win, because of people like her and other people, you know, that has been in my corner, you know, believe in me sometimes without even believing myself. And the reason I'm saying this is because the person that's listening to this, this is the exact same reason why you need to keep going, because you're going to be the next X, and you're going to have to inspire and be supportive of the next Marlon. And hopefully better than X and hopefully better than Marlon. And that's the goal here, to create a path to make it a little bit easier for the people that's coming behind us. And so, guys, girls, my name is Marlon Avery. If you don't follow me on Instagram, it is marlon.avery, marlon.avery, co-podcast on Instagram, co_podcast on Twitter. Leave a review on iTunes. Let's see if we can get our ratings up, which we have. We hit a new record today on the listens, a new record today on the Instagram page. It's been 3 weeks, and we have 500 followers on the Instagram page. You guys are awesome. I am blessed not only to have her, I am blessed to have you. I do not take any of this for granted. I've been through the struggle. I know what it looks like. I still can taste it in the back of my throat right now. I don't take any of this for granted. I am always, always open for questions, always open for a conversation, no matter where you are in the world. Instagram does not have a zip code. Hit me up.